You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Well, hello there, and welcome to our third edition of Ask the Vets with Dr. Jeff here on Pet Life Radio. And I am sitting here in stunning, gorgeous Southern California today. I have to tell you, for those of you who are not lucky enough to be in a place like this, it's got to be close to 80 degrees, not a cloud in the sky. It's just wonderful. It's nice to be here in Southern California. Anyway, once again, I'm Dr. Jeff Werber and the host of this show. And we want to hear from you. I'm not here for me. I'm here for you and your pets. So there's got to be some burning questions that you've been dying to ask your veterinarian, some burning questions you've been afraid to ask your veterinarian. And when you're listening to us here on Pet Life Radio, it's free and you can't beat free. So give us a call at 877-385-8882. You can also kind of text me along the way. You can email us at drjeff@petliferadio.com. And, you know, we want to hear from you. Of course, we have to thank our sponsor, ProSense Pet Products. You know, basically, we all know that our pets love us, so we want to love them back and recommend you love them back with ProSense. ProSense is our veterinary-recommended pet healthcare products specially formulated to ensure optimal health for your pets. And you could check out their full line of premium pet healthcare products at your local Walmart or any other great retailers. And there are a lot of some in-store offers at walmart.com. So go ahead and support our sponsors, because I'm here because they're here. Anyway, I have a special guest with me in studio. And by the way, when you get your desire and you decide you want to not be embarrassed, not be shy, and call us at, once again, 877-385-8882, you can break in. We'd love to take your call. You know, one of the things, and this is how I was so intrigued by this service, because years and years and years ago, and I have to say, as a veterinarian, as a practitioner, one thing that many pet parents do a lot is they tend to anthropomorphize. They actually put their own values in the dog, and they'll say, because they don't like going to the park, they'll say, oh, no, he doesn't like doing that. It's like, how do you know? Did you ask him he doesn't like doing it? But they are so quick to anthropomorphize, and they share their own views through their pets. And I'm always trying to guard against that. And of course, we all do as veterinarians, but there is a time when I found myself doing that which I've asked my clients not to do, and that is to start thinking for your pet. So I had a situation where I got a call once from a very long-term client of mine that was faced with the tough decision to say goodbye to her very, very old, very large German Shepherd dog. And this woman, this dog could barely get up, and this woman equally was as old and frail. And she called me in a panic because she had nobody to help her bring the dog in, to help her put the dog in the car. I told her that we can help her get the dog out of the car once she's here, but she couldn't even get help putting the dog in the car. So I offered, this is some 20 years ago, to, I'll tell you what, I said, if you don't mind my coming over to your house late because I have to finish my workday, I will do it at home. Oh my God, she thought I was the greatest thing since sliced bread. So I went ahead and I went to the car. I put up a little bag together, like the old good old-fashioned doctor's bag, and I had everything I needed in it. And I went to the house, and I have to tell you, it was the most surreal experience sitting there with this woman reminiscing about the dog. The dog was sitting on its favorite bed in its favorite room, the living room, and there we were, the three of us, me, the old woman, and the old dog. And we sent that dog off to its better place. And the experience for the woman, oh my God, she couldn't stop thanking me. It seemed so much better for the dog. And of course, for me, I realized, you know, as much as my patients love to come in and see me, and they do, it was amazing to see how comfortable the dog was. It wasn't frightened. It wasn't anxious, not afraid. And I think that when your last moments on this planet are facing you, that you don't want to have feelings of anxiety and stress. So I started at that point offering it for my clients that wanted euthanasia. We call it house call euthanasia. So in this past January, I was at the North American Veterinary Conference in Orlando, and I meet up with these two women, both graduates of the University of Florida School of Veterinary Medicine, and they have a business called Lap of Love, and they started in Florida. And you just want to hear a different perspective, someone who's basically made this their career. And so if you have any questions, I want you to call us because it's a really interesting topic. Once again, our number here is 877-385-8882. And I'm going to introduce a very good friend of mine, Dr. Mary Gardner, who's actually living in Oregon, soon to be a Southern Californian. And Mary, just how did this come about?
Well, thank you for having me, Jeff. It's a wonderful privilege to go to people's homes and help them during this time and making sure that the end-of-life care is done with dignity and love. Dr. Danny and I started this maybe 3 years ago and in South Florida, and it has flourished to now maybe 33 locations around the country because people have understand or following our progression and understand that this is such an important time in the relationship with their pet and doing it at home on their schedule. You know, we go nights and weekends and around maybe the children's schedule if they'd like to be present or maybe not. And it has been such an amazing journey with Danny and I and all of our veterinarians. And like I said, has grown and has been well received by all of our clients as well.
Now, one of the things that I know that you also offer pet hospice.
Correct.
And why don't you just for a second, because you know, people, it's become a big thing as well in human medicine is hospice care. You know, my mom, before she passed, you know, she had hospice care. For those of you who don't really understand it, how does hospice apply for our pets?
So there's two things I think with hospice is one is a consultation. So that way we can go to the homes, evaluate the pet in their own environment and also what disease that the pet has. And then depending on the disease, we'll talk to the owners about what kind of medications can we give the pet for a good quality of life. So it's not about just prolonging the life of the pet. It's about making sure that they have a good quality for as long as they can have with that family. Many of our clients are larger dogs that are having trouble getting up and moving around. And we go to the home and teach owners how to create the environment so that way the dog's not slipping around on the floors, how to use towels as a way to help the pet get up. And sometimes the pet has not been on any medication, so any pain relief or anti-inflammatories for a year or two, because the owners are sometimes concerned that if they bring him into their vet, the vet may say, oh, he's getting old and it's time. Well, we can do a lot on some very benign medication that won't do damage. And so we talk to the owners about the disease they have and consult about also what will the end be like. A dog with arthritis and having difficulty getting up is a very difficult situation than a dog in heart failure or a cat with kidney failure. Those end-of-life processes that happen are very difficult, and it's important for the family to know a dog in heart failure, we don't want them to get to that emergency state and situation where they're calling us in a panic at 2 o'clock in the morning because the dog is in such distress. So we're able to help before end-of-life for, you know, even if it's just a few days or a few months to make sure that that family has a good quality time as well as the pet has quality time with that family so that way they can help say goodbye more peacefully when the time does come.
You know, I've actually heard, and I've actually heard clients say it as well, that you actually can make a mistake by waiting too long. You really can't make a mistake by doing it a few days too early. What do you think of that?
Yeah, that's a saying I say a lot on the phone to clients who call in. It's better to be a day too early than a day too late. And I think many clients that have waited too long with maybe a first pet will call us sooner for their second pet because they realize that they did wait too long. The other thing I hear a lot is, you know, I'll be speaking with a family member and they're making the decision and today's maybe Saturday and it's the day I'm supposed to go. And they're like, but he's having a good day today. And I think it's important to realize too that it's okay to say goodbye on a good day and not wait until he's having a horrible day, which may be the next day because they're having trouble sleeping at night and they're panting and that brings anxiety to the entire family, not just the pet. But I think it's okay to say goodbye on good days because that's how you want them to remember the situation. I've had wonderful experiences where families will have barbecue parties for their pet and the neighborhoods come over, the kids come over to say goodbye, and it's a celebration of that pet's life. And so it is very difficult to see a family that have waited too long. And the other thing is too, we provide a peaceful euthanasia in the home. And sometimes if you wait too long, you're actually not going to have that peaceful euthanasia and you might be in a situation where you have to take your pet into the emergency clinic under distress for both you and the pet. So waiting too long can pose a lot of problems.
You know, I've also had situations where first of all, it's a different experience for me too as well, because obviously I've done countless euthanasias here in the office, but I find that when you go to someone's home, it's so different. First of all, everybody is more relaxed, including the pet, which obviously is the most important person, the four-legged person, to be relaxed. You reminisce about their life. It becomes a celebration of life instead of a mourning of the passing. And we've had, glasses of wine, and we're sitting and schmoozing, and it really is. It's so much nicer. And I find that the pet owners, the pet parents, are much less stressed about it, because they see that the pet is less stressed. And I think that's important. Now, a good friend of mine who's done hospice before, Dr. Alice Villalobos here in Southern California, she has a term, and I used to call it the beauty of euthanasia, and she terms it the gift of euthanasia. And I think so many pet parents are so afraid of that act of forcibly saying goodbye, and you really shouldn't. You really, when it's done at the right time, when you see that the quality of life is such that the animal is truly suffering, when you look at your poor pet and you start feeling sorry for them, they can no longer get up, they're not eating, they're becoming thin, almost emaciated thin, skin and bone thin, and they no longer respond to you coming home. They're just there, they're existing, but they're not living. This is when it's time to say, you know what, buddy, you've been so good to me, and now I'm going to be good to you. And it's... I wish, people wouldn't be so afraid of it, because it really does. It's something that we can do for our four-legged friends that unfortunately we can't necessarily do, at least legally, with our two-legged friends. Anyway, I want to, this is heavy, heavy-duty stuff here. Heavy-duty stuff. We want you to smile and be happy. But no, it is a great service, and I'm so glad that you're here with me today, Mary. And if you have any questions about this, about the process, please, please give us a call while we're here. We're about approaching halfway through our show, so it's time to take a little break. Once again, I want to thank our sponsor and ProSense Pet Products, and available at Walmart and other retailers. And we will be back in just a few minutes as we're going to hear from some more sponsors, and we'll be back with you in a minute.
We'll be right back right after these messages. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Ever wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to Communicate with Animals is a four-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises and method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit PetLifeRadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Love My Pets, the new single by Mark Winter, available in iTunes.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's All Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. All Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand. This is the place for a special paparazzi treat. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Well, welcome back to Ask the Vets with Dr. Jeff here on Pet Life Radio. And, once again, it's because this is, we are the only call-in show on Pet Life Radio Network, and we're live, too. I think we have a lot of nervous, shy listeners or listeners that don't have access to a phone, which I don't buy considering the fact that it's so easy to call us at 877-385-8882. We do want to hear from you. We want to answer your questions. You know, we had one of the things we talked about last week. I said we were going to talk about it this week, and that is spay neuter. It's a very, very important preventive measure that we can do for our pets. There are both behavioral benefits, especially in dogs. There are many medical advantages in both the male and females. And I want to touch upon some of the new data. And unfortunately, there are many municipalities, and I don't necessarily disagree at the shelter level, that are insisting or by law, by city ordinance, depending on where you're from, that these animals need to be spayed or neutered either before they leave a shelter or 4 months of age. And, you know, that to me has always been a little young. I've had my issues. My issues, interestingly, had more to deal with practicality. For the large breeds, I found that there are some growth issues related to spaying or neutering too early. The smaller breeds, my big issue there was that many of the small breeds, if not most, will often suffer from something called retained deciduous teeth. These are baby teeth that did not fall out on schedule. Typically, the process of exchange from baby tooth to adult tooth starts at around 3.5 to 4 months of age with what we call the incisors. These are the little teeth up in front. And this process continues until 5.5 to 6 months, when typically by 6 months of age, all of the baby teeth should have fallen out and replaced by the adult teeth. Well, what often happens with the small breeds is that the adult tooth comes in, but the baby tooth does not fall out. And we end up with double teeth, two teeth coming out of the same socket in the gums, and we call these retained deciduous teeth. And of course, to prevent malocclusion, to prevent a malalignment within the teeth, to prevent the adult tooth from coming in crooked in the wrong position, we recommend pulling the baby teeth. Well, the problem is when they're 4 months of age, you have no idea which teeth may or may not end up being deciduous. So that means you're not going to pull them all. So often, we have these animals that are spayed or neutered because the county or the city is demanding it and wants to impose a fine if you don't do it. But are they going to pay for the additional risk of anesthesia, the cost of the second anesthesia, to, at 6 months of age, mere 2 months later, have to re-anesthetize this dog to pull teeth? That is insanity. Number one. Boy, it's nice having your own radio show because you really get to be on your soapbox and let people know how you feel. And I don't mince my words. So next up is a large breed. I've always noticed some growth instances, issues. I had a Labrador retriever years ago that was neutered very young at 4 months. And this guy grew up to be the lankiest, longest legged, not such great muscle tone dog that I ever had. And I've had Labradors for 40 years. And I have since learned that has a lot to do with testosterone influence on early growing tissues and joints and bones and muscle development. But what we recently found out from a study out of Purdue, the veterinary school at the University of Purdue, or the Purdue University in Indiana, is that there are actually protective benefits to the sex hormones, right? When two rapidly growing large breed dogs, which are the dogs that are typically prone to bone cancer when they're older. So exactly what the protective effect is, we're not sure. But statistically, there was a 65% greater incidence in long bone cancer in dogs that were pre-pubertally neutered and a 35% increase in long bone cancer in these large breed dogs that were pre-pubertally spayed. Well, that's huge. Now, we do know that there are benefits to early spaying when it comes to mammary cancer, and there are benefits to neutering when it comes to conditions like perianal adenomas, perianal fistulas, obviously testicular disease, but these benefits are a little bit later when it comes to the male, so you have plenty of leeway time. And in the female, if you spay a dog after her first heat, but before her second, and the second heat's around 14 months of age, and to get the benefit of the early exposure of growing bone to the estrogen hormone, you can wait until they're about 12 months of age. They're still now adults, so you can avoid, help them as far as the bone cancer issue, and you still derive the benefit of the breast cancer prevention. So when you look at these facts, our recommendations as a veterinarian have changed dramatically, and now I'm of the belief that unless they're knocking down your door, or unless you have a veterinarian who is kind of gutsy as I am, and is willing to write that letter to the animal control state agency to say, I am not neutering or spaying this dog this young because of these reasons. And this owner will spay this dog. And you can fight it, veterinarians. And you can tell your veterinarians, for everyone out there listening, that you can fight it. They're really what they're going after. They're going after the backyard breeder. They're going after the shelters, those that are not responsible pet owners, pet caretakers, those that are going to probably breed again and breed again. And they're the ones that why these rules were implemented, not for people like you, people like me that are they know the benefits of spay neuter are going to have it done anyway, but of course want to do it smartly and wait until the right time. So just something to think about as your veterinarian is talking about spay neuter. Little guys, 6 months is plenty. Wait until all the teeth are in. Once you see all the adult teeth are in, it's time. And for the larger breeds, I'd say wait till they're close to a year. My new break point is 12 months. That's getting the females before their second heat, and it's getting the males when they're just about driving you crazy with the roaming, you know, with the peeing on everything in sight, marking every territory they can. You know, you got to put up with some of that stuff just to make it work. But you can save their life later on down the road by being patient. So I hope you all write this down. If you have any questions about this, certainly give us a call, 877-385-8882. Or you can contact me directly at Dr. Jeff, that's Dr. Jeff, at PetLifeRadio.com. So other things, you know, I'd like to share some, you know, really interesting things that happened here. Today, I just got finished sewing up a dog, and this is something that you should know about. The way it is in Los Angeles, and probably the way it is in most cities and municipalities. But one of my clients, an elderly client, was walking their little cute land shark chihuahua. Very cute to look at, not necessarily very cute to touch. And we have a caller coming in, so just wait one sec. We're looking forward to hearing from you. Anyway, so as they're walking past his house, the gardener left the gate open, and this huge dog, wasn't sure what it was, comes out and literally starts attacking both the woman and the little dog. And obviously, finally, the gardener ran out, and the owner of the dog ran out. Everything is fine, and they took care of all that they needed to take care of. They traded phone numbers. But just know that because this dog was on a leash, the little guy, the little land shark chihuahua, all right, and the big dog wasn't, everything is being has to be covered by the owner of the dog that was off leash. And so just know that when you are, and it, the sad thing is, you can have a big dog attack a little dog, no damage to the big dog, a lot of damage to the little dog. If they were both on leash, they're supposed to be under owner's control. The owner of the big dog takes care of their own dog's problems, which in this case like this was nothing. And the owner of the little dog has to take care of their own. So, and if both dogs are off leash, again, you just take care of your own pets. So it's very important that you, whenever you're walking, keep your dog on a leash. It's for their own safety. And heaven forbid something happens, you have much more control of your dog. And if it's a little dog, you can scoop it up in your arms and hopefully avoid what I had to deal with today. Fortunately, this little cute chihuahua, well, cute looking chihuahua, not so cute behavior chihuahua, is going to do just great. So we have a caller who's on the line.
Hi. My name's
Hi.
Suzanne. I just got a new puppy, 4 months old. I only had him for like a week. And we have three cats, and I'm wondering if there's an easy way to get them to all live in peace together.
Okay, here's, first of all, it's funny. I don't know if you've been listening to our show, but I am even crazier because I have six cats to go with my five dogs. Don't tell anybody, please. and I, basically what I did was, well, first of all, my cats were already so used to being around dogs that whenever I bring a new dog in the house, it's just, oh, here's another one kind of thing. Dad, I hate you, but okay, I can get used to it because I'm already used to the other five.
Right.
But what I would recommend doing is, to obviously, if it's a young dog, it's a puppy, 4 months old, what breed is your puppy?
He's a mix. He's a Bichon Frise with also a Coton.
Oh, Coton de Tulle. Okay. So we have a Bichon de Tulle. First of all, they're very similar dogs, very similar looking dogs. They're pretty good. They're pretty low shedding, hypoallergenic. Good for you. Usually both white. So
yes, all white. You're right.
Yep. So one of the things that you can do is as the cats are out holding the puppy, and just don't let the puppy go crazy. Puppy is going to see the cats and say, oh my God, look at these moving play toys. I haven't seen one of these before. And it's probably going to want to play and romp and, take its paws and whatever, manhandle these cats. Only in play, of course. But obviously the cats are going to get freaked out. So you want to try to...
That was him. My cats have claws, too.
So you want to be very careful and let it be on their own turf. Now, one of the things you can sometimes do is keep the puppy in a safe place, like in a one of those crates, those metallic crates, so they can kind of see. It almost like looks like they're in a jail, and which is, by the way, good for puppies anyway, because puppies like to be denned, like to be crated. And then let the cats kind of, you know, put the feed them right in front of the puppy cage. So they're going to be used to seeing this dog. They'll be protected because of the gates, because of the fence, but they still will kind of get used to the dog. What you don't want to let the dog free yet to interact with the cats until the cats seem to be somewhat chill. Now, if you have cats that are treat motivated, like love a little piece of turkey, what I would also do is holding the dog in your arms, approach the cats slowly while they're chilling. Now, a good time to approach cats, by the way, is just after they've eaten. Because after a cat eats, they want to do one of two things. They want to sleep or they want to groom themselves. And when they're sleeping and grooming themselves, they're much more approachable. So with the puppy in your arms, gently bring the puppy over, petting the cat, letting him sniff the puppy, give the kitty a little kitty treat of some sort, and sort of make the experience a positive experience and not a negative experience. Actually, one of my magnificent cats, my American Ragdoll, was given to me by one of my clients because this Ragdoll was new to a house that had two other cats and two dogs. One of the dogs was a shepherd. And this shepherd saw this cat as another play toy and was just scaring the heck out of this cat on a daily basis. The cat was continually hiding under the bed or under the couch. And the owners felt so bad, they actually brought the cat in to rehome. Well, I took one look at this cat and said, oh my God, this cat's stunning. I'm rehoming him. And I did. And I'm telling you, this cat is amazing. Not afraid of my dogs at all, nor they are not trying to kill him because it's just another cat. And my dogs are used to cats. So once
I can't wait till we get to that point.
So once the puppy gets used to seeing these cats around, it doesn't try to attack them, doesn't try to run after them. The cats are, first of all, let's face it, the cats are a lot smarter. The cats are going to be able to jump on the high counters or on the top of the fridge. So when they really want to get away, they can. And just a few swats to the face. I would recommend, please, trimming your cat's nails. But a few swats to the face, if the puppy gets too close, I think he'll learn his lesson. But try to make it a positive experience. And please give us a call back in a few weeks. We want to hear from you, Suzanne, and let us know how things are going.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you for the help.
You're welcome.
Yes, for sure.
All right. Thank you.
Have a great day. Bye.
Thanks. So that seems to be it for our number three show. We're so glad you were able to join me. We want to hear from you. You have to get to the point of not being afraid to call in, just like Suzanne did. It was painless. She didn't complain one bit, and she got some good information. So we'll be here next week, same bat time, same bat channel, 877-385-8882, Dr. Jeff at PetLifeRadio.com. And next week, I want you to think, because we're going to bring up a fairly controversial topic, and I definitely want to hear from you, and that's going to be talking about zoos, circuses, and wildlife animal parks. We want your take. Let's talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, the pros and cons. And it'll be a good discussion coming up next week here on Ask the Vets with Dr. Jeff, Pet Life Radio. And see you next week.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.